Hamilton, UKIP leader in the Senate. Neil, you've unveiled your people-powered manifesto for the upcoming Senate election, branding it the bravest ever manifesto for moving Wales forward. It sounds like food for Citizen Smith, power to the people. Is this really a politician calling for revolution or some clever way of securing the votes of right-wing fanatics?
Well, people said the same of UKIP over leaving the European Union when UKIP was founded nearly 30 years ago to take Britain out of the EU, restore our national independence. We were regarded as loons and fruitcakes. I think David Cameron called us that. But we know who won at the end of the day, and it was UKIP. It wouldn't have happened but for us. Now, our focus is on what sort of Britain do we want post-Brexit? What sort of Wales do we want post-Brexit? We see devolution is breaking up the Union. We see that in Scotland very dramatically. But we're also moving in that direction in Wales because Plaid Cymru are applying the tourniquet to Mark Drakeford's neck. He thinks he won't win a majority in these elections, so he needs Plaid Cymru to prop up a permanent Labour government in Wales. And the price of that is to move further down the track to independence. We think that shouldn't happen, and that the people of Wales should be given the power to give their verdict on what devolution has achieved for them in the last 20 years, which I think is very little.
Prior to that, though, you want a referendum to scrap the Senate immediately within the Senate term. So that seems like a pointless exercise if you're going to scrap it anyway.
No, we wouldn't scrap it without having a referendum. Our point is to have an immediate referendum if we were to get a majority in the Senate on the 6th of May. That would be our aim. But as we know, it takes time to achieve these things in politics. It took us best part of 20, 25 years to get our referendum on leaving the EU. I hope that we'll get a verdict on devolution long before that. But I'm not expecting miracles overnight, but I am starting the debate in this election. And in the course of the next Senate, then I hope that we will build a majority for getting this referendum.
Some people will question why you want to undo 20 years of work where Wales has been given extraordinary powers. I mean, you know, quite a lot of big changes have happened as a result of the Senate, albeit we don't have full powers, but we're getting there, aren't we?
Well, we're certainly getting into a mess, I know that. The health service in Wales has been an absolute shambles. 5 out of our 7 health boards have been in special measures or targeted intervention directly under the control of the health minister in Cardiff. I don't think people in North Wales who suffered the appalling incompetence of the Betsy Cadwaladr health board for the last 10 years think that devolution has been a great success for them, given that the health budget is half of all Welsh government spending. Schools budget, again, that's another quarter of Welsh government spending. The parents at Llangennych in Llanelli, of course, had a Welsh medium school foisted upon them, which they didn't want. That was the result of politicians in Carmarthen, controlling Carmarthenshire Education Authority that ignored the wishes of the people. What we want to do is to devolve health and devolve education from the politicians, whether they're in Cardiff Bay or County Hall, to the people who use these services. We want to have elected health boards in every region of Wales to whom officials are responsible, and they can decide local priorities for spending as well as hold officials to account. Similarly with schools, we want schools to become more independent of local education authorities, like free schools are in England. They're self-governing institutions, and the parents and governors control the school's policy. You know, if politicians are the answer to the question, then it's a bloody silly question, I think is what most people would say. And devolution has been a disaster for Wales. We're older and poorer and sicker than we were in 1999. Wales is now at the bottom of every measurable league table in the UK. I've got higher aspirations for Wales than that.
The million-pound question is, you know, it's understandable what you're saying. We get where you're coming from to a certain extent with the devolving of power further down centrally from central to more localized, decision making. But without the Senate, where's the finance coming from? Who will make these decisions? You've mentioned health boards and education, but there's billions of pounds in the economy for Welsh government. Who is going to be in charge of that? Will it be Westminster? Will it be London?
Well, part of the problem that we've got in Wales is government doesn't have enough money to fund the services that we need. You know, government at all levels in Wales spends about £40 billion a year. That's not just Welsh government, but local government and also the UK government, so far as it still has responsibility for providing certain services. So that's £40 billion of spending. But the Welsh tax base is capable of raising only 25 billion. There's a 15 billion funding gap there that is currently funded by the United Kingdom Treasury. This confusion of responsibility is, I think, a problem for Wales because Wales is out of sight, out of mind. You know, we're going to have our number of MPs at Westminster reduced in the next 5 years because of devolution. Instead of having 40 MPs, we'll only have 32 after the next general election. So Wales is becoming more and more marginalised at Westminster, which is where the money is. You know, the M4 Relief Road project, for example, was originally forecast to cost £1 billion. As with these projects always do, the costs have escalated out of control. And Welsh Government used a fig leaf of the environment to justify their cancellation of the project. The reality of it was they didn't have the £2 billion to spend on it. And yet that M4 junction through the Bringlas tunnels at Newport acts as a tourniquet on the Welsh economy, which the Welsh government can't afford to loosen. Another example, the Circuit of Wales project, £500 million project funded privately, but they wanted a guarantee from Welsh government if the project went belly up, the lenders would get their money back. That would cost £8 million a year, peanuts in context of Welsh government's budget of nearly £20 billion a year. But because of borrowing controls from the Treasury in London, we wouldn't give the Welsh government absolute freedom to borrow whatever they like, because obviously the English taxpayer would be on the hook if everything went wrong. We've not been able to fund that project. You know, devolution is holding Wales back in so many ways. I'm in favour of local decision-taking. I'm in favour of local priorities. That's why getting rid of the middleman in Cardiff is actually going to make government more responsive, not less responsive. And giving Wales a more powerful voice at Westminster is going to help us to get more money for Wales. You know, the DUP in Northern Ireland managed to squeeze an extra £1 billion out of Boris Johnson to get Brexit through. What did the Welsh government do? All they did was insult the government at Westminster and try to frustrate the whole project, which the majority of Wales had voted for. You know, devolution has held Wales back in so many ways because of posturing politicians in Cardiff Bay who are feathering their own nests. It has been a great deal for politicians on the gravy train. It's been a very bad day for ordinary voters in Wales.
Well, you have been very damning, ruthless, almost in your criticism of politicians in Wales. They won't take kindly to that, obviously. Plaid Cymru are talking about doubling the number of MSs in the Senedd should they win or get into government in Wales. Are you really saying that all of these people just do not have the interests of Wales at heart and that they are, as you say, riding this gravy train, taking the money, handing out favours to people across Wales, companies and businesses, lobbyists? Is that the true picture of the Senedd? Is that what we understand it to be in Wales?
Well, I think you've got a power structure in Cardiff Bay, which never changes hands. And therefore, the interests of those who control the levers of power are the interests that matter, not the interests of the people the politicians are elected to serve. You know, we all know about Welsh Labour. It's a tribe. And nobody ever steps out of line for fear of having their head cut off. There's been not one single rebellion by a single Labour Assembly member in the 5 years that I've been in the Senedd on anything. Even the appalling story of the death of Carl Sargent, which clearly caused a great deal of heart searching amongst Labour AMs. Nobody dared to oppose the party line. I described them as a terracotta army of politicians. Just like the Chinese terracotta army, they sit there mute and immobile in spite of any injustice and any incompetence. And we don't have a real parliament in Wales because there's never any change of government. And the government sustains itself by having an absolute rigid North Korea-style tribal loyalty imposed on all those who sit as Labour members. Plaid Cymru, too, aren't really interested in the views of the people, especially on issues like Welsh language, their woke agenda as well, which they're fully signed up to, you know, getting rid of statues to Welsh heroes, imposing mandatory Welsh on people who don't want it, and so on and so forth. So my view is that although I wouldn't say that all politicians are venal and self-serving, it's certainly very convenient to have a salary of 70,000 a year plus, and you can get detached from the interests of the people that you serve. And I think, as far as the Labour Party are concerned, because they've always had control of the levers of power in Wales, they've got immense budgets to dispense, and they distribute that budget amongst people who they can trust to follow the party line, whether they're Labour members or not. I think that this is a miasma of political corruption which affects the whole of Wales. To an extent, it always has done. I was born and grew up in a time when Labour was super dominant in Wales. In the old Glamorganshire, Monmouthshire, Carmarthenshire, back in the 50s and 60s, Labour ruled the roosts with a vengeance. And anybody who dared to step out of line would lose his contract with the council. So they enforced a kind of mentality of do as I say, not do what's in the interest of the people. And that's the culture that I want to dismantle. I want Wales to go forward with a vibrant, open economy, which is not super dominated by the public sector and subject to the whims of politicians. I want to see a Wales which is prosperous and strong and which has a bigger element of private enterprise in the economy so that we can raise the taxes to improve our public services. And we can't be forever dependent upon handouts from the taxpayers of London and the South East, who are the great engines of wealth for the whole United Kingdom. So, it's a long-term project, this.
You want to end the Nation of Sanctuary. You're talking about standing up to Marxist organisations, seek to erase our proud history. You'd immediately put an end to the Welsh Government's audit of statues and street names. Are you not alienating a generation of voters, the 16-plus, who have grown up with this kind of ideal of equality, liberty, wanting to put right the wrongs of history? Do you risk alienating that massive population of potential voters?
Well, it's nothing to do with putting right the wrongs of history. We can't do that. History is history. It's gone, finished. Of course, we have different standards today, different outlook on life. But we can't undo what was done in the past. But we shouldn't erase our past, and we shouldn't apologise for our past either. It's not our apology to make anyway. The times change and people's outlook on the world changes. People have to be seen in the context of their time. Great military figures like Sir Thomas Picton, who gave his life at the Battle of Waterloo, he's the most senior British officer who was killed at Waterloo. A lot of his attitudes wouldn't be acceptable today. But, he was a very distinguished soldier and he was instrumental in defeating Napoleon, who actually reintroduced slavery into the West Indies. So defeating Napoleon actually freed the slaves of the West Indies, whatever the outlook on the world of the people who were in the army at the time. So I'm not pandering to any minority, whether that's a minority of age or religion or political view or anything. I'm just putting forward common sense views in the course of this election campaign. And I think Wales should be overwhelmingly proud of the role that it's played in the world in promoting Christianity and Western civilization as a result of the expansion of the British Empire. I don't apologize for the British Empire. I think it was a massive force for good in the world. And look what's happened to Africa in the 50 years of decolonization which was replaced by corrupt dictatorships, war and strife, disease and pestilence, and poverty on a scale which was unimaginable in terms of the numbers. Who's to say that that's an improvement on what the British Empire offered? Not that we live in a world of empires today. You know, that's now an outdated concept. But of its time, it was the best thing that was on offer. I don't apologize for that at all. And I think we should be proud of our history and proud of the Welsh men and women who were instrumental in creating it and whose memory should come down to us today, not sanitized so that all the spots and wrinkles are removed, but we should be understanding of the way people thought in a different era. And the woke agenda, which is fundamentally the promotion of extremism through organizations like Black Lives Matter, you know, their demonstrations were exempt from the coronavirus restrictions. The police just stood on the sidelines and did nothing. But people who are demonstrating against the restrictions of freedom for us all in the coronavirus regulations, they were treated with a very heavy hand. You know, there are issues of free speech here and freedom of assembly. All the fundamental human rights in the past we've taken for granted have now been threatened by overzealous governments, both in Cardiff and at Westminster. I want to dismantle all that as well. And I think that should be a message which young people should be able to vibrate to. You know, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I wanted to liberate my country from the shibboleths of the past. You know, homosexual relations, for example, were illegal up until 1967. I was 18 in 1967. I supported the reforms which were brought in to make sexuality something private rather than public. And so many other things where I believe in liberty and people's right to make their lifestyle decisions for themselves. Similarly, I think governments are a menace, actually, to the freedoms of the people more often than their protectors. And we've seen that with a menace in spades in the last 12 months, where we're already talking about the next down, the next lockdown, and the one beyond that, even though effectively coronavirus has been conquered through vaccination. So, you know, we are fighting this election on so many different levels to re-energize democracy in this country and to restore liberty to our people.
You will obviously be aware that some of the things in your manifesto, there's certainly talking about nation sanctuary and charity beginning at home, offering sanctuary to asylum seekers fleeing war zones and horrific circumstances is an act of charity in itself. And the people of Wales have sort of, you know, decided, the government of Wales decided that is a hand of charity they want to offer. What's so wrong with that? And what are the alternatives?
Well, Britain has been committed for the whole of my lifetime to granting asylum for true refugees from persecution. And that hasn't changed. But the Pinali camp in Pembrokeshire, for example, had a couple of hundred people in it who overwhelmingly were not entitled, in my opinion, to refugee status because they weren't actually coming immediately from war-torn countries. Most of them, as I understand it, came from France in little boats landing illegally on the beaches of Kent or Belgium or the Netherlands. Your legal right as a potential refugee or asylum seeker is to find safety in the first safe country in which you arrive. Now, that's produced massive problems for countries like Greece, of course, who are very close to Syria and other war-torn places in the Middle East. And it's right that all European countries should bear a part of that burden. But it's got to be done within a structure of law, signaling exercise, where they like to wave a flag in order to appease their woke minorities and the religious minorities and racial minorities upon whom Labour is now overwhelmingly dependent. The people who bear the price for this are ordinary Welsh people, the residents of Pinali, the taxpayers of Wales. The camp in Pinali cost us £1 million in policing and security. That's us in Wales, that's cost us. This can't continue. Immigration is out of control. We're adding a city the size of Cardiff to the population of the UK every single year through immigration. As a result of the COVID crisis, we had to vaccinate everybody. And in the course of that, we discovered a million or a million and a half illegal immigrants in this country, people had no legal right to remain here. You know, we've got to protect our borders in order to protect our public services, in order to control our population. The green belt around cities is being gobbled up. We have a massive housing crisis. And this is because of uncontrolled immigration and illegal asylum seeking. And it is part and parcel of that. Yes, of course, we must give asylum to genuine refugees, but it's got to be done in a structured and ordered way and within a system of law. Otherwise, it's unfair to the legal asylum seekers themselves. And to have an invasion of people not entitled to come here, breaking the laws, not observing the rules, it's going to increase the amount of resentment and opposition and hostility to them. So I've got enormous sympathy, obviously, with anybody who wants to flee a country like Syria and seek sanctuary and to improve their quality of life in the West. But we can't be an open door. We can't be put out the welcome mat to all comers, which is what the Welsh government sought to do. And that was a direct incitement to illegal asylum seekers to head for Wales.
You'll be aware of the polls and how they suggest that Labour will suffer some large losses, but that also suggests that UKIP will not gain a seat at the Senedd in the next elections. Where would that leave you then and UKIP? I mean, you will not have a presence in Wales other than you're there, you're a party, you've got your manifesto, you've got your offices possibly, but where does that leave you if you don't get your seat?
Well, I'm not contemplating the prospect of not winning a seat. Obviously, the polls vary a lot. There was a BBC poll a few weeks ago which showed us winning one seat at least in the Senedd. But that's not really the point. The only poll that matters is on the 6th of May, and an election campaign can change the weather in politics. And you know, whether we win or whether we don't win doesn't invalidate the platform on which we're standing. Now, UKIP started from nothing in 1993, 1994. It took us 5 or 6 years to elect members to the European Parliament. It took us another 17 years beyond that to get the referendum that we wanted on leaving the EU and winning it. So politics is a long game. Well, at my age, I don't suppose it's as long a game as I would like anymore. But there are others to come after my generation, and we are fighting for eternal principles, albeit in the present day. I've been fighting for these principles all my life, and it's a fight that I still continue. Obviously, times change, the political issues change, but actually looking back, less than you might imagine. So we will continue to fight. I have every reason to believe that because of the proportional representation element in the elections to the Senedd, just as last time, you know, UKIP got 12, 13% of the vote, and we got 12 or 13% of the seats. If we can get 5 or 6% of the votes in this election, we'll probably win a seat in each of the regions of Wales. So you know, it's a very doable project in my view. And we're well within the margins of error between winning and losing. I accept it's a knife edge, but vote UKIP, you've got a very good chance of getting UKIP. And what we need to do is get rid of the permanent Labour government in Wales. You know, we've got to have a pluralistic political system that works, where government changes hands every so often, where the political parties can be tested against their promises, can be tested against their ability to deliver on them. And that's
not likely. It's not likely to happen, though, is it? I mean, the predictions are, okay, Labour will lose some seats, but Labour will still be in position to have a strong part in the coalition, having the majority in that coalition anyway. How do you see it? What do you predict? Give us your predictions for the result.
Well, it'd be a foolish person who gave you a proper answer to that question, I think, because I've no idea. If we take the general election last December, as a guideline. Obviously, Labour are going to lose a handful of seats, 4 or 5 seats. Who knows whether that'll be reflected in the Senate elections, where the electoral system is different. And what Labour loses on the swings, it can pick up on the roundabouts. Who knows?
Why do you think that nobody is prepared to throw their hat in with the Welsh Conservatives then? What is it about conservatism that is such a no-go area for Welsh politics?
Well, I personally don't understand this, not that I'm a conservative anymore, but Plaid Cymru represent some very socially conservative areas of Wales. Dwyfor Meirionnydd, Ceredigion, Carmarthenshire, and the heritage of nonconformity and so on. These are socially nonconformist areas, but the Plaid Cymru leadership are as woke as you can make them. They are fully paid up members of the Cardiff Bay Bubble Club, and they don't represent the interests of ordinary people and the aspirations of ordinary people. They've no idea about how to run a successful economy. Wales is flat on its back economically. We're the poorest part of the United Kingdom, and we've got poorer relative to the rest of the country. Some of our areas, West Wales and the Valleys, for example, are some of the poorest areas in the whole of Western Europe. What has Labour ever done for these areas? What have Plaid Cymru ever done for any of these areas? I hope that the people of Wales are starting to wake up. I fought my first election in Wales back in 1974. It's another age altogether. Abbot Hilary in the mining valleys of Monmouthshire, as it then was. In the election before the one I stood in, Labour got 85% of the vote in that constituency. It could have been North Korea if the election result were just looked at on its own. In that area now, Labour struggled to get 40%. So it just goes to show that over the decades, people have been weaned off Labour in Wales because Labour's not delivered for them. The Brexit vote was an example of this as well. Look at where the Brexit vote in Wales was highest. It's in the areas where Labour have historically been strongest. Merthyr, Ebwy Vale, the Western Valleys, that all these areas rejected the Labour, because of course Labour has abandoned its white working class roots in favour of kowtowing before minorities, whether they're religious minorities or sexual minorities or gender majorities, in some senses, minorities in others. The whole transgender nonsense. A few thousand people, perhaps, in Britain have gender dysphoria. And yet, somehow or other, this is an issue which has got to the centre of the left-wing imagination. So in so many ways, Wales has changed in my lifetime and changed for the better, but in some ways, nothing has changed. And I want to change everything that hasn't changed.
You said that you did that with Brexit. Obviously, you saw the win there. Do you think that the rally cry from Plaid Cymru for independence is the one item, the almost a Brexit for Wales, that are going to get them over the winning line? Because Labour have stated their case. They want to remain in the union, albeit with far more powers for policing and so on. Did you really see Wales becoming independent within the next 5-10 years?
I don't think the people of Wales will vote for political independence. Plaid Cymru struggled to get up to 20% and they've never managed to get beyond that. I think that is their ceiling, actually. They can't answer the question of how do you square the equation? Where's the money coming from? Government at all levels spends 40 billion a year. We can only raise 25 billion from Welsh taxes. Is the English government, as it will become if Wales becomes independent, going to send Wales a cheque for 15 billion a year to pay for the public services that the UK government now pays for? Of course not. So Plaid Cymru simply can't answer that question. Where's the money coming from? What's the currency that they have? Will they carry on having the pound? In which case, the Bank of England will control the Welsh government's economic policy. It's balmy. And what sort of nationalist party, anyway, thinks it's better to be governed from Brussels than Cardiff? Plaid Cymru want to rejoin the EU. Good luck with that one, because your country voted to leave. Something which you tried to frustrate and block for the last 4.5 to 5 years. So the idea that Plaid Cymru is a genuine national party is a farcical idea, in my view. And they live in a never-never land, which is far remote from the real world. I mean, how many of them have ever had a proper job? How many of them have run a business? Just like the Labour Party. You know, they're all third sector, public sector employees, and that's their mentality. Whereas what we want in Wales, to escape the scourge of poverty, is to create an economy which is capable of creating more wealth. They haven't the first idea how to do that. They're very good at spending. They're hopeless at earning, except unless it's a public sector paycheck that they can get. And they're very good at getting those. So what we need to do is to have a revolution, not just in politics in Wales, but also in economics. Independence could be a prospect for Wales if we had an economy to support it. But the kind of mindset that Plaid Cymru and Labour have got makes that an absolute impossibility. So, you know, this is a nonsense fantasy world. And I don't believe that the overwhelming majority of the Welsh people would vote for that. Same as actually the majority of people who vote SNP in Scotland, I'm sure, will not support the independence referendum that looks ever more likely in Scotland.
I never thought I'd hear UKIP Neil Hamilton saying power to the people. Neil Hamilton, controversial, outspoken as ever. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Diolch yn fawr I chi gyd.
Diolch yn fawr iawn.